From Google and lessons learned at Silicon Valley, Sanjay, founder of Sovana, reveals how he's intersecting real assets with Bitcoin. Sanjay shares with us his journey and how Sovana lets homeowners unlock their property equity to purchase Bitcoin without debt. Let's get into it. As a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. If you enjoy the content we're producing, we highly encourage you to share, leave a comment, and share your feedback, as this all helps us greatly.
This isn't for everyone. It's for the ones who know the old system is broken and are ready to build something that lasts. Welcome to the Build with Bitcoin podcast.
I'm co-host Israel Munoz, joined with co-host Lynn Bairstow. Today we have the great pleasure of welcoming Sanjay Mavinkurv onto the podcast, founder of Sovana. Sanjay, first of all, welcome. It's great to have you on.
Thank you. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
So Sanjay, Sovana is a platform that allows people to tap into their real estate equity to get exposure to Bitcoin without incurring new debt, without giving up their home equity. We'll get into all of the details on the product and how you got to launching Sovana. But as a starting point, it'd be great to get to know a little bit more about you. You have a fascinating background. And if you can take us all the way back to the Harvard days, if you don't mind, tell us what got you into tech and eventually into Bitcoin.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, my background in training, both in computer science, spent almost 20 years, a little bit more than 18 years at Google, joined right after college. This is back when Larry Page used to interview everyone, or at least folks in the tech org individually. And so I was like, I don't even care if I get the job or not. I'm just so happy to have met Larry Page. So spent, like I said, almost two decades at Google, worked on a bunch of all in consumer tech products over my tenure there, worked in a bunch of roles, mostly on the product side, though my training is in computer science. Had a fantastic time there. I remember when I left, my then boss was like, "What's going on? I thought you loved it here. Can we pay you more?" And I was like, "There's nothing you can offer me that I don't already have. I'm probably the happiest Googler here today. It's just time for me to try something else." And so I left Google in 2021 or 2022.
Okay. And at what point in that two-decade history at Google did you discover Bitcoin? You found it early on, I know. So if you can tell us, at what point you discovered it and when the conviction grew.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I discovered Bitcoin in 2012. So about halfway through my tenure at Google, I discovered it on an email investing list. And I still remember one of my very good friends and investor in the company posted on this list. He said, "If you haven't yet started paying attention to Bitcoin, now is the time." This is in 2012. And in that same email, he listed out the properties of Bitcoin. And I remember thinking to myself, if these properties hold, Bitcoin is the next global monetary base. It is the next reserve asset. It is the next gold. And now, I know that's not necessarily what most Bitcoiners thought when they first encountered Bitcoin. Often the story is, "I thought it was stupid. I thought it was a scam. I thought it was a Ponzi." And only later, years afterwards, did I circle back to it, wishing that I hadn't dismissed it the first time. So totally understandable, but that wasn't my entry into Bitcoin. I was already a gold bug at the time. So I'm from India, and in India, gold is sort of embedded culturally into our DNA. I think it's because for all my adult lifetime, at least, we've seen 10 to 12% inflation, and that's against the US dollar. That's not even against a basket of goods. Against another fiat currency, the Indian rupee has lost 10 to 12% a year. And so I think viscerally, as Indians, we may not be able to articulate academically, intellectually, why we love gold, why that cultural affinity formed, but we all feel the impact of debasement. And we, again, may not be able to articulate it, but we get hard assets, right? We feel that when gold is in my hand, it's something that can't be taken away from me, can't be debased. And so whether it's gold or real estate, we love real estate as well. We've developed this deep affinity to gold. And so before I'd ever heard about Bitcoin, I already owned physical gold, probably more than both of you could carry in both your hands. Not the ETF, not gold miner stocks, but physical gold that I custodied in my own house. And so because I was sort of already wired as a gold bug, and by the way, I still love gold. I still consider myself a gold bug. But I immediately looked at Bitcoin and I thought to myself, this is everything I love about gold without the shortcoming. And that shortcoming being its physicality. So from then on, my story is very typical of a Bitcoiner. Went down the rabbit hole and tried to evangelize it as much as I can. Because in 2012, so this is something I hear from other Bitcoiners from that era as well. In 2012, like Bitcoin wasn't in the mainstream. I remember being so fascinated, so excited when I would see a mention of Bitcoin in any mainstream media or, in the real world. There's still a Bitcoin article somewhere. And so I think back then I felt a personal duty, like not a burden because it was a duty that I loved. A burden has a negative valence to it. I felt a strong obligation to spread the good word. I was like, somehow my life path crossed Bitcoin at this stage. I need to tell everyone. And I will admit that it's less so now. I will always and very happily, very, very happily answer questions about Bitcoin and talk Bitcoin all day like Israel and I did. But I'm not as, I would say, proactive about it. Because now I'm like, it's everywhere. There's amazing resources like this podcast, like tons of books out there, right? And so back then was a different story. I would just spend all my time. Because if it really is the life raft that we believe it is, then it's like, how could you not tell everyone? Right? And so yeah, that's sort of my entry into Bitcoin.
Sanjay, I also discovered Bitcoin late 2012, and I it clicked for me immediately as well, less as monetary. I mean, it did monetary. I was living in Mexico and I'd gone through a devaluation and experienced the challenges of money remittances and moving money around. But more than anything, as a technologist, it was the missing piece to the internet that it allowed for value-to-value transfer, which we'd been very successful with communication, but not with value. And that's how it clicked to me, was from a tech standpoint. I also felt the call to evangelize, and I was raising my venture fund at the time, but I was met with a lot of, isn't that for drug dealers and, bad people on the internet, or what is the purpose of it? And so I'm just wondering. And so I ended up scaling down my call to evangelize just because of the raising a fund at the same time. It was possibly sending the wrong message. But I'm really curious, in Silicon Valley where you were, did you how were people reacting to it? I mean, less of a need from a financial standpoint, but possibly more of a openness to the technology and the digital nature of what of a new financial system. Curious what the atmosphere was like.
I felt a lot of what you're mentioning, particularly in Silicon Valley, particularly in the rich world. I said I'm from India. I have lots of family back in home in India, and so I feel like the more developed and somewhat functioning your system is, the less you're going to naturally embrace Bitcoin or understand it. I encountered a lot of that. One of the best articles that I've ever read on Bitcoin, probably I would say like my single favorite article on Bitcoin, isn't really about the value proposition of Bitcoin, but it tries to diagnose why so many otherwise smart people dismiss it and don't get it. It's written by, he's now out as Jesse Myers. At the time, it was Croesus, I believe, was his pseudonym. And it's something along the lines of why the yuppie elite dismiss Bitcoin. And he has two axes forming quadrants that now I look at like everything in the world through this lens. And one of the axes is high IQ, low IQ. So you've got like really smart people and not as smart people. But then he is, and that's probably an axis that like, you know, a lot of people see the world through. There's another axis which I really love, which is trust in the system. Like, how much do you believe what you're told? How much do you believe what experts tell you, what the institutions tell you, what, you know, 300 year old universities tell you, versus how much do you view all those with a healthy dose of skepticism? And I think you need that. You need that. If you trust the system, if you trust authority, if you trust the establishment too much or even beyond a certain level, I think it's very hard to understand Bitcoin. And I bumped into that everywhere. I mean, I still do. I still do. So yeah, I it was frustrating. I remember trying to evangelize Bitcoin to folks at Google, but it was met with exact reaction you probably remember yourself from those early days.
And just one more follow-up question on that. You had mentioned earlier that when you left Google that you were a very happy Googler, and it's a great environment to be a part of such an incredible company, but you felt that you needed to do something different. Was it more the call for being on your own as a founder, as an entrepreneur, or was it about Bitcoin?
It was really about Bitcoin. I knew when I left Google that I wanted to devote the rest of my life to Bitcoin. And in particular, getting people into Bitcoin. I think it's fantastic once you own Bitcoin and you are looking to upgrade how you custody Bitcoin. You're looking to figure out an inheritance plan. You're looking to borrow against it to buy your house. All those things are fantastic. But my own passion is in getting people into Bitcoin. Once you've got Bitcoin and you're trying to figure out all those other things, fantastic. But I'm not that worried about you because you've got Bitcoin, right? You've got the life raft. I'm worried about you if you don't have Bitcoin. And so I knew not only did I want to focus the rest of my life, I mean, I'd already done it for 14 years in my personal life, trying to tell everyone I know about Bitcoin, trying to get them to make an allocation to Bitcoin. And I knew I wanted to continue that. And so that narrowed it down a lot for me. That's sort of what led to Solana.
Lynn and I are partners at Baselayer Advisors, where through our experience and network with venture capital partners, we connect interested investors with unique opportunities in the space and advise startups on their growth and fundraising. Visit our website's advisory section to learn more.
Yeah, I mean that frustration, to put it in those words, of having more people kind of open their eyes to this quicker is, I think, something anyone who's been in Bitcoin for quite a few years is quite familiar with, and that's why it's so gratifying for Lynn and I to see so many great companies building in the space, such as Solana, who are in a whole variety of ways and niches, getting that exposure out there and getting more ways to be able to access Bitcoin. And, you know, you mentioned something earlier, as far as your background and, the affinity to gold in India, Sanjay, I'm from Mexico, as you know, and it's probably true for most underdeveloped countries, that there's just natural affinities to these hard assets. I mean, I remember my grandma saving in gold. Real estate has always been, like, since I was a kid in my mind, like, the, you know, one of the safe haven assets or hard assets that lets you protect your wealth, that lets you, you know, protect yourself from eroding purchasing power. I think most of the world, just naturally, because most people, you know, have gone through some sort of currency devaluation, lack of government trust. And I think most people are naturally wired for hard assets. And the digital nature of Bitcoin makes it, of course, a little tougher to wrap your mind around. But here we are at the convergence of these hard assets. And that's precisely what Solana is helping, you know, helping bridge. So can you tell us a little bit about the offering of Solana, Sanjay?
Yeah. So Solana is a way for property owners, real estate owners, to tap their equity and invest in Bitcoin, but in a way, and this is our superpower, that requires no monthly payments and no money down. We believe, we know, there's a lot of property owners out there who are sitting on what we think of as trapped equity. The reason it's trapped is because they would need to make a monthly payment to access any of it. And for whatever reason, they can't afford to, they're unwilling to make that monthly payment. And so even though they're sitting on hundreds of thousands of dollars of property equity, it's in a way that they can't do anything. And so Solana provides a way for that home equity to be invested in Bitcoin without that monthly payment.
Yeah, and I think the no debt piece is just so is so key. And we have seen other varieties of this model, but that also from the get-go tap into your home equity. So can you explain maybe for someone who's thinking, you know, geez, this sounds almost too good to be true. What's the downside risk with something like Solana, Sanjay?
Yeah, exactly. Let's go into an example. It's actually best understood by way of an illustration. So based on how much property equity a customer has, we qualify them for some maximum investment size. The customer then gets to decide up to that maximum how much they would actually like to invest in Bitcoin. So as an example, let's say a customer qualifies for and decides on a $100,000 investment. We can go into how we calculate their maximum investment size a little bit later, but for now, let's say they qualify for and they go for a $100,000 investment. So the first step is Solana with our capital, and there's an asterisk on our capital. From the customer's perspective, it's Solana's capital. We can talk a little bit later about where we get that capital from. But from the customer's perspective, Solana invests $100,000 of our capital into Bitcoin. We buy the Bitcoin ETF. We can also go into why we buy the ETF later. But we buy $100,000 worth of the ETF and we custody it in a dedicated, segregated account at Schwab. And it just sits there. The $100,000 of IBIT just sits there. And it sits there for the entire duration of the term. The maximum term length is 5 years. You have to, we call it settle. You have to settle or end after 5 years, but the customer can choose to end at any point earlier. You just get up to 5 years. So let's say in this example, the customer waits out the entire 5 years. The way we settle is we take a look at the value of that Bitcoin investment. It started out at 100K. If the value has increased, let's say the value has increased to 150K, we split the profit with the customer 50-50. So the customer would get half of that 50K appreciation, and we would keep the other half of that 50K appreciation. So that's a happy case. That's the happy scenario. If, however, at the end of the term, the value of the Bitcoin investment has declined, so what started out at 100, let's say at the end of the term, it has declined to 80K, the customer has to make us whole. The customer takes the downside risk. They would have to write us a check for 20K. So in a nutshell, you can think of it as our customer gets half of the upside in exchange for taking on all of the downside in a Bitcoin investment that they don't put a single penny into. We give them up to 5 years, but the customer can end early. So let's say you start one of these positions. By the way, we call them BIPs, for Bitcoin Investment Partnership. You can start one of these BIPs, and if Bitcoin skyrockets a month later, you can feel free to give us a call. We'll end the position and we'll give you half of the profit. So you're always in control. You don't have to wait 5 years. The reason we give you up to 5 years is because as Bitcoiners, we know that over, you know, it's either four, I think it might be more than four now. I think it's closer to 4.5, or, but over some, you know, long enough period, Bitcoin is generally up. Particularly if you bought, you know, during a drawdown like now, you're probably not even going to need the entire 5 years, but we want folks to know that they have that runway.
Yeah. Well, what I love about the structure you described, Sanjay, is even for the most risk averse person or profile, who wants to stay away from covering any downside risk, I mean, you have a full 5 years. I mean, it would essentially have to stay underwater for 5 years continuously for you to never be able to tap into this profit share feature that you mentioned. So the flexibility, I think, is super interesting. Sorry, Lynn, I think you were going to jump in there.
I did have a question about the real estate. How do you secure the downside protection for? Do you have a lien on the property, or how is that handled?
That's exactly right, Lynn. So at origination, we do record and insure a lien on the property. It's a fixed dollar lien. So in the example of a 100K investment, our lien would be for $100,000. And the moment we settle the position, if it's up, we rip up the lien, right? That's the happy scenario. We would only have to enforce the lien if our customer doesn't hold up their side of the deal, right? If the Bitcoin position ends down, customer owes us 20K, we need to have assurance that that side of the deal is held.
And Sanjay, where is Sovana in the journey for someone listening who might be curious or interested in the product? I mean, can you describe if Sovana is already taking customers? What stage you're at?
Yeah. So we announced at the Bitcoin conference last year, so end of May, and we're still accepting folks onto a wait list. Right now, where we are is we're working with capital partners to secure the funding to buy the Bitcoin. So there's an entire other side of Sovana. We've been talking about the customer side that faces property owners. We have another side of Sovana that faces capital. And the idea there is, our insight there was that there's a lot of capital out there that is tiptoeing around Bitcoin, hasn't yet taken the plunge. I mean, look, if all the capital out there was already in Bitcoin as they should be, the price would be much higher than it is today. There's a lot of capital out there, whether it's individual high net worths, whether it's families, whether it's institutions, sovereigns, corporates, that because they don't understand Bitcoin, they're still nervous about the many risks to Bitcoin, you know, what they perceive as risks. And they are risks, right? They, you know, you and I may assess those risks differently, but a lot of people have concerns around, will the government shut it down, right? Will quantum somehow kill it? Is it the MySpace of cryptocurrency? There's any number of, you know, is there some sort of a bug that could emerge that hasn't yet been discovered? There's any number of risks that capital has that's preventing them from taking the plunge. And so our thesis there was, if we can provide that capital with a safety net built of the conviction of the property owner, right? A conviction that we share, then by partnering them together, and this is why we call it the Bitcoin Investment Partnership, we can unlock new capital and new people into Bitcoin. So the way I think about it in a nutshell is, on the one side, on the real estate side, you've got deep conviction without capital. Maybe they have capital that they've already invested, but they don't have any more to, like, they're looking to invest more, right? They've got conviction without the capital. And on the other side, you've got capital with no conviction. And by partnering them together, you unlock lots more capital entering Bitcoin. And so, to answer your question, Israel, right now we're working with a number of our capital partners to secure the funding to start deploying into these BIPs, these Bitcoin Investment Partnerships.
Can you talk about what types of capital partners you're finding appetite from, and even geographically? I'm assuming that the retail product is U.S. only at this point. Is that?
At this point, yes. The retail product, I think of it more as the real estate side, because we have had a lot of interest from commercial groups. We're only working with residential properties at the moment. And I should also mention that we are only working at the moment with investment properties, whether that's a rental, whether that's a secondary home, whether that's an apartment fourplex or apartment building. We're only working with investment properties. We are not at the moment working with primary residences. There's nothing that prevents us from doing that in the future. We certainly want to go there, but understandably, you have to be very careful when working with someone's primary residence. It can be done. It can be done prudently and sensibly, but you got to be very careful with it. Sort of like the L word, leverage, right? It's not all bad, but it can be bad. And so when it comes to where someone sleeps at night, we want to get there, but we want to do it with a lot of care, consideration, and thought. And so that's why we're starting with investment properties.
It's also a good filter that means that whoever is investing in this way has excess capital available to them. So yes. And so on the capital partner side, well, where are you seeing the greatest interest from the investors that want to put money, the capital without conviction?
Yeah, we're seeing interest across the board. I will say that the recent price action is a double-edged sword, in that it's a beautiful illustration of, hey, look, you don't have to worry about the volatility, right? You're the no conviction side. We've got real estate owners who sleep like a baby despite what's happening with the price action, right? And having been in since 2012, you know, I've seen my net worth collapse multiple times in my life, and I sleep like a baby. But then on the flip side, it's also a very enticing time to come in, right? So the price action sort of working in both ways for us. We're seeing an interest across the board. We're seeing interest from individual ultra high net worths. We're seeing investment interest from families. We're seeing investment from real estate firms who really understand, real estate credit firms who really understand our security They understand exactly what we're doing to secure the downside. And they feel, hey, all my friends are getting rich off of Bitcoin. Why do I have zero allocation? And so it's really been across the board. But I would say those are the biggest sources of interest.
And Sanjay, can you share a little bit about the actual origin story of Solana as well? I mean,
yeah.
The inspiration behind it.
Absolutely. So in 2022, I think that's right. I think it was 2022. I know exactly where Bitcoin was. So this is when Bitcoin was on its way down from 70K to what ended up being the low around 16K. And we were partway through that at around 30K. I think that's 2022, if I'm not mistaken. Around then, right? So I do remember it was about 30K. And I remember at that time having this unstoppable urge to buy more Bitcoin. I just didn't have any money. And so I did have a fully paid property, investment property where my family used to live many, many years ago. And I thought maybe that's my source of liquidity to buy more Bitcoin. I got a cash out refinance and immediately learned that it's not so easy tapping into your home equity, right? It requires a hefty monthly payment if you want to extract any reasonable amount of cash out of it. And so I got an interest-only loan. It was about 4% and some odd. I'm still paying it to this day, interest only. And I bought Bitcoin with it. And then I saw my Bitcoin investment get cut in half from 30 to 15, 16, whatever it was. And that was the second thing I learned. First thing I learned was monthly payment is a big barrier to tapping into your home equity. Second thing I learned was it is super stressful investing that home equity into an asset that is going to get cut in half. That's the rule of Bitcoin. It's going to get cut in half the day after you buy it, right? And so, you know, sure enough, that happened to me. And that is actually when I thought there's got to be a better way. I know there's a lot of people like me sitting on a ton of home equity. Ton relative to, you know, their net worth. I think I saw that for homeowners in America, greater than 50% of their net worth is tied up in their primary residence. And so I thought there's got to be a better way of tapping your home equity to invest in Bitcoin. And that was sort of the long term, the low time preference hodler mindset. Long term, I knew I wanted to be one pillar of the product, and I knew I wanted the other pillar of the product to be no monthly payment. In fact, if you watch the announcement video at the Bitcoin conference, it started out as a decade long term. Only after talking to Capital did we have to sort of meet in the middle, right? A decade is a long time for a capital provider, source of capital, to have their money tied up. The property owner is in control. They can end early at any time, but our capital provider cannot. Our capital provider is in it for up to the entire length of the term. And so that is really the reason why we brought it down from 10 years to 5 years. But yeah, the origin story in a nutshell is really my own story and adventure trying to, I mean, I'm happy now that I bought the Bitcoin. And I should also say you mentioned, Israel, other ways of tapping home equity. I celebrate any path to Bitcoin. If you know, maybe you have to be careful with leverage and you know, overextending yourself, but I celebrate any prudent path to acquiring Bitcoin. It might be the right thing for certain people to take a cash out refinance or get a HELOC. If you can afford that monthly payment, then maybe that's the right path for you. And that way you keep all of the upside, right? You don't have to share your upside. It's the second question on our FAQ. Why wouldn't I just take out a loan and do this? Why do I need Solana? You totally might. In fact, the founder did just that, right? What we're trying to do is offer an additional path to Bitcoin for those for whom it's right.
Sanjay, when you were designing this product, what sorts of regulatory hurdles did you have to go through or considerations for it? And do you have differences depending on the geographical location, like New York versus Miami versus LA? How do you look at that versus, you know, with the lean structure and the regulatory environment?
Right. So we're not a lender. We have structured this to be a partnership and technically a joint venture. So what we do is Sovana forms a joint venture with our customer. And there's a bunch of sort of legal structuring around it, but at its core, it genuinely is a partnership. I love the idea of partnership, but it's also genuinely a partnership between Sovana and the real estate owner. So because of the way we're structuring it, by the way, that's another reason we are not for the moment working with primary residences. Primary residences brings a host of challenges. And so sort of a walk before you run. That's another reason why we're focused right now on investment properties. But yeah, it's actually not as complicated as lending would be. The lien question is a really good one too, in that we do have to be very rigorous on a state-by-state basis to ensure that our lien is done correctly and is properly enforceable. The only other way that I know of that is widely available to most people to get cash out of their home without a monthly payment is what's called an HEI, a home equity investment. This is a product that is offered by, I think I know like 7, 8, 9 companies out there that offer this product. It's called an HEI. And what they do is, and I'm simplifying here, and I might use some terms that they don't use, but to give you the gist, what an HEI does. Have you guys heard of HEIs? Okay, Israelis. So an HEI is a company buys some percentage of your home and gives you cash for it. So they'll, for example, call it 10% of your home, and they'll give you cash for it today that's unrestricted. You can do whatever you want with it. And then at the tail end, when you sell your home or when you refinance your home, they will collect 10% of the value of your home. So they participate in the appreciation of your home. Now, most of the companies that offer this, when they buy 10% of your home, they buy it at a discount today. So even though they're buying 10% of your home, they may not pay you 10% of its value today. So they bake in a little bit of profit from the get-go. But hey, you get cash in your hand. And so the HEI industry has existed for 10, 15 years, and they use a very similar lien. Their security instrument is very similar to what we use. That's where the similarities end. Our product is completely different from then on, but that industry actually is what gave me assurance that we're able to do something like this. That we're able, where Sovana doesn't even disperse the cash or the Bitcoin to the customer. HEIs do. They hand you a stack of cash or a check. Sovana buys the Bitcoin and we custody it in an account that is held by the joint venture. So there are legal protections there for our customer and for us to make sure that the Bitcoin stays there for the entire length of the term. But it's the HEI industry that gave us existence proof that such liens are possible and enforceable. But like you said, Lynn, it's not in every state. There are certain states that are more challenging than others. So we do a very rigorous state by state process, depending on where the property is.
Yeah. Well, thanks for explaining all the details behind that, Sanjay, because I think for interested customers, sometimes all the details can be a little overwhelming at times. And there are different flavors to this, as you mentioned. We actually have had one company that employs the HEI model on previously. But yeah, to your point, I mean, they're all different. I think different structures, different trade-offs that depending on who you are and your risk profile, your wealth exactly. profile, there are different ways to get exposure to Bitcoin. And so I'm right there with you. I think I'm all for any and all prudent variations of getting access to Bitcoin. And, you know, I feel like the real estate and Bitcoin convergence is growing. It's growing a lot more noticeably lately. I think we didn't have many products that you know, converged these two industries a few years ago. And as of lately, there seems to be an uptick, even, you know, on the regulatory front. We've had, you know, the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac news of different regulators exploring Bitcoin as collateral for loans. And you have products like Solvana, the partnership that you're setting up, the HEIs. I have heard of other real estate funds that are sweeping cash flows into Bitcoin. So these asset classes seem to be converging. What does, I mean, for you guys at Solvana, Sanjay, what does success look like in 2026 and 2027, let's say?
It's really just one thing, and that is getting as many property owners and capital providers into Bitcoin as possible. So all we think about is how much Bitcoin are we acquiring on behalf of our customers. I think what you're saying, Israel, around Bitcoin sort of becoming more mainstream in various areas of TradFi, I think has to do with just the realization that on the part of folks in TradFi that Bitcoin really is amazing collateral. And even if you don't have a strong belief in Bitcoin and that it's going to continue to become the global store of value, it's still very hard to deny that it's amazing collateral. As long as you believe that it has some price, not even some value, you just have to believe that it has some price and that it has sufficient liquidity and that you can trade it at a moment's notice, right? If you believe those things, then you appreciate how it's the most perfect collateral you could imagine. In India, actually, just going back to my origin in India, it's very common. Like you see billboards, you see it in the windows of banks, the notion of a gold loan. So Indians, back to our cultural affinity for India, own a lot of gold. In fact, I've seen studies. It's very hard to know this for sure, but I've seen studies that show Indian households own more gold than the top three or four central banks combined. So even compared to central banks, Indians own a lot of gold. And so this notion of a gold loan is very, very common, where you give your gold to the bank and they will, you know, assess it and keep it in their custody in their safe deposit boxes, and they'll give you a loan against it. And I just think to myself, like, how much better is Bitcoin as collateral for something like that than gold? And I think it's just a realization on the part of TradFi of what Bitcoin is that is causing it to be more embedded into the mainstream.
How are you I know that you're still in the capital acquisition place, but what, I mean, what is your kind of your growth plan for getting this word out that people who may be hesitant about buying Bitcoin but are hearing about it, that they now can take a position in the structure that you're providing, which I think is just fantastic because it does allow a lot of flexibility for those who are, you know, who have assets in the real estate, but are, you know, still a little cautious about Bitcoin, but want to dip their toes into it. So what is your go-to-market strategy on this and how are you getting the word out?
So I think on the one hand, it's very easy. On the other side, it's a lot more challenging. On the real estate side, this didn't surprise me. I told my co-founder well before we launched this at the Bitcoin conference that this is red meat for Bitcoiners who own property. So on that side, honestly, we've got a wait list of 9 figures. I think it's like $200 million last time I checked, just coming in naturally through the website. Because, you know, not to keep saying this over and over, if you believe Bitcoin is going to be up at some point in the next 5 years, if you believe that today's price, if you believe that that's not the peak price for the next 5 years, it's really hard to not win with the Solana BIP. Again, remember, one of the reasons that we're only doing investment properties is I want to make sure that our customers can wait out the entire 5 years if they need to. If it's your primary residence and you have to, for whatever reason, sell it, or for whatever reason, you maybe have to move for a job, or I don't want you to have to be forced, because Solana will require you to settle the position if you sell your property, obviously, right? That's what our lien is on. We didn't want that. So, but back to your question. That side's been super easy. It really is the capital side. And I think as Bitcoiners and as evangelists of Bitcoin, it's something that we've all had experience with. It is very, very hard to, it's a process. It's a process to get someone to understand Bitcoin. You're almost never going to make the light bulb turn on immediately on the first try. Dear friend of mine, an advisor of the company, Vijay Boyapati, he talks about touch points that you need, like, you know, between 5 and 10 different touch points. You need to hear about Bitcoin from that one really smart finance guy, you know, or from, you know, your someone at work, your hear it on TV, your favorite author. Like, you need to hear it from a bunch of different angles before you overcome that hump. And so it's that side. And there, honestly, Lynn, like, it really is just a one by one, just like in our personal lives. If you really want to convince someone about Bitcoin, you just got to work on them. And there's really no shortcut to that. It really is a one by one walking folks through. But hey, I love talking about Bitcoin, so it's perfect.
Yeah, it's hard to get around that skepticism at the early stages of a new profound technology. And I mean, to that point, Sanjay, I'd love to get your insights on any parallels or perhaps differences that strike you from your experience with the internet boom. You were there. We didn't get into that side of your background, but you were there actually from in the early days of the Facebook origin story. You were at Google, of course, very early on. You were in, you know, the heart of the tech geographical origins of the internet in Silicon Valley. So you saw the internet grow from similar skepticism, maybe, of that's going nowhere. People that, you know, I have regular mail, you know, who needs this, who needs that? It's for the black market. I don't know, whatever those arguments were back then when the internet was starting to boom. Anything that, I guess, draws parallels or differences from what you experienced and saw when at your early days in Google, let's say, to where we are in the adoption of Bitcoin?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's similarities and there's differences. By the way, since you mentioned Facebook, fun fact, I don't know if you guys have seen the movie The Social Network, but the Winklevoss twins and Divya, in a scene in that movie, approach Mark Zuckerberg's in the hallways at Harvard and tell them about this project they're working on. And they say, our first programmer graduated and went to Google. That was a reference to me. And so, not by name, but it was a sort of a indirect reference to me. But to your question on parallels and similarities, I think a lot of it depends on, I think Bitcoin is much harder because the moment you send an email to someone or experience a video call, like, I think it's easier for the light bulb to turn on. With these other technologies, I think, that have come before Bitcoin than with Bitcoin. I think a lot of it, to our, what we were talking about earlier, depends on your personal experience. But in the rich world, in the developed world, I think it's a lot harder for the light bulb moment. I think payments, I remember for me, that had a very profound and instant impact. This was back in the day, Lynn might remember, it was a website called blockchain.info. It was one of the early, and it had a beep when you received a payment. And I remember sending it and thinking through what's happening. What are all the steps along the way from the moment my wallet sends and my blockchain.info wallet on my computer gets the beeping sound? That to me was a magical moment. But yeah, in my experience, I've found Bitcoin in my life in America for the most part to be much more challenging to explain. Like the thing about AI, right? Like you talk to it for like 2 minutes and you're like, this is amazing. There's just no argument. There's no argument against its power, right? We can think about where that power is going to take us and humanity, but you can't deny the power and the magic of it, right?
I consider myself a very poor explainer of Bitcoin. I think when you've been in it for so long and it predates even all the other cryptos and things like this, and your journey, you know, is a collective range of experiences. It's like, I'm obviously not very good at explaining it, but the minute I can show someone a Lightning wallet and I can transfer them, I have them download a wallet in a couple steps and move money on a Sunday afternoon and it's immediately in their hands. It's like, I think that moment is all the actual transaction of moving money person to person without an intermediary is a magical way of explaining it too. So, but we don't have the need to do that because we've got credit cards and, you know, in the US, and it's, we don't have those struggles about moving money place to place, but I think people can at least experience it.
I completely agree with you. If you understand that the transfer, the payment is happening with Bitcoin without an intermediary, because if you don't understand that on the surface, if I send you $5 with Cash App or if I send you $5 with Venmo or with Zelle, it sort of feels similar. Now, if you understood exactly all the different gateways that your money is going through, then yes, it's absolutely magical. That's what I felt. But it's not obvious to everyone the direct, unstoppable, censorship-resistant nature of Bitcoin. I know a lot of Bitcoiners are very, very bullish on payments. And don't get me wrong, I love payments. More power to anyone and everyone trying to make payments a thing. My own My own take, though, is that Bitcoin has to mature as a store of value. Let's get the payments infrastructure ready and let's use it as a way to entice those into Bitcoin who are feeling pain points with payments. But I sort of think of Satoshi having given, the first generation a collectible that we will mature into a store of value, right? Satoshi gave it to us as a collectible, this weird thing that nobody really understood. We, the first generation of Bitcoiners, it's our duty to take it, what was a collectible in 2009, and to solidify that as a store of value. That is our responsibility, our generations. It's going to take 10, 20 years, maybe more. Then we hand off to the next generation the responsibility of taking a store of value and maturing it into a payment, day-to-day medium of exchange. And I think you have to go in order. It's okay to sort of get a little bit ahead of yourself, but you've got to be aware that we are prepping for that baton to be handed, and therefore to honestly sort of temper our expectations with the knowledge that it's not going to happen. It's not going to explode into the mainstream until that baton is handed and we have matured Bitcoin to store a value. I sort of think about it like sometimes it's not the best analogy. I need to come up with a better one, but it's the best one I have so far, which is it's like a little, the seed has been planted and it's growing into a tree. It's going to give us fruit one day, but let's make sure that the tree grows into something robust and indestructible, right? I think our generation should focus on making Bitcoin completely indestructible. Now, I think it's like, 90 plus percent there, maybe 95, 90, but let the tree grow. It's going to give us fruit one day. It's going to be the best payment system one day. But, I think it has to happen in a sequence.
I think you're right that it's maybe even harder to grasp than the internet. And perhaps you just touched on one of the reasons, because it's both a hard asset and a network slash protocol. And depending on which angle you're coming from, maybe a gold bug clearly sees all the hard asset properties. Maybe a technologist comes in and sees, the network side of things. That's part of what Lynn and I, of course, try to do is showcase exactly what Bitcoin, the protocol and asset, does in as a whole, and all the innovation happening around it. And there's a lot of innovation happening on both ends, right? And then, of course, add on to that all the other crypto tokens. And that's, for example, something that the internet didn't necessarily, compete through. I know there were other iterations of competing protocols, apart from TCP/IP, in the early days, but really when the broader world saw the internet, it was already kind of the established protocol for peer-to-peer communications, and it just kind of grew from there. Anyways, there's a whole set of reasons why this can be a bit tougher to understand. But yeah, to your point, I mean, it'll take time. I think we're making great progress, collectively, and ultimately, Bitcoin doesn't depend on any single one of us, right? We just kind of plug into the network and contribute in our own way. All that to say, Sanjay, I mean, applaud everything you guys are doing at Solana. I know we're kind of getting close on time here, and we had more questions that we wanted to get to today, but hopefully we can leave those for a future conversation. And it'd be great to follow the journey and, see where Solana is at a few months or a year from now. Lynn and I have had the pleasure of already doing that a couple of times with some of our very early guests. We're at around the 2 year mark of the podcast, and it's really, I mean, it's really something to see the progression in just 2 years, which really isn't much. And companies are maturing quickly in the space, so I'm sure Solana will be no exception. But I mean, that being said, Sanjay, I mean, where can people find out more? How can people get in touch? Where would you like to point people to?
Just one place, Solana.io. We encourage Look, even if you're a primary homeowner, sign up for our wait list. We'd like to get to you eventually. If you're on the capital side, we'd really like to talk to you and everyone in between. Sovana.io.
Sanjay, any places that you're going to be? You'd mentioned that you launched last year at the Bitcoin conference and another one is coming up. Will you be back at that or speaking in other venues where people can get a chance to interact with you?
I really only just started even doing podcasts, but we hope to be at the Bitcoin conference. We don't have definitive plans right now, but I am trying to get Sovana out there more and more.
Great. Well, we'll really look forward to following the journey, as Israel said, and tracking the progress. It sounds like just a really creative way of unlocking opportunities to acquire Bitcoin for both those who like yourself when you're a Bitcoiner and you run out of the spare cash to buy it at opportune times. It unlocks opportunities to do so, and then also new people. I just think it's a very an innovative way for allowing people to kind of de-risk acquisition of Bitcoin. Congratulations on the innovation.
Thank you guys so much. It's been really great talking to you guys.
Appreciate it, Sanjay. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Build with Bitcoin. If you found it of value, please take a second to like, subscribe, or share. This helps the visibility and reach of our podcast so that more people are aware of the innovation happening in and around Bitcoin. It truly means a lot. I'd also like to take this opportunity to invite you to join us at an event that Israel and I are hosting, Meet to Tech Talks 2026, taking place from October 25th to the 27th at the exclusive Punta Mita Resort in Mexico. This will be an intimate gathering of 125 invite-only participants exploring how the future of capital is being shaped by the intersection of Bitcoin, artificial intelligence, and energy. To request an invite or for more information, visit mitatechtalks.com. We hope you'll join us. And thanks again for being a part of the Build with Bitcoin community.